Good. So our next one we were going to talk about this morning, the idea of content-based routing. And we'll look at the pattern. Well, we'll look at a case study. We'll look at the pattern itself. And I'm going to walk through a fairly, hopefully, interesting example of how to implement this. Yeah, you're used to this now, aren't you? So, yeah, the book actually did go live on Amazon.com last night as well. So at this point, it's there you go. That's right. Booksellers everywhere, fine places, drugstores, secondhand shops. You can now find this book all over the place. So this is the 8th chapter of the book where we kind of, I think one of the first ones we did that actually jumped into a pattern, not all the primer technologies. And this was looking at content-based routing. So the company scenario, and one thing with a book like this, given we never know how many times we're going to ever write a book in our lives, is you inject your family members as much as possible into the book. So using family members' names, Ewan kept sticking his girlfriend in there. I'll stick my sister's sister-in-law's name in there. So there we go. So McKeever Technologies is a company who has a lot of, or they've bought a lot of companies. And I don't know if you're, you know, deal with your day-to-day where you've got companies that build through acquisition. You know, they don't necessarily grow organically. They're buying little pieces here and there. In this case, this is a company that's done that. They've continued to pick up other companies. They've tried to acquire and embed their systems in there. Problem is they haven't consolidated all their order management systems. So as you might expect, you have one system that maintains all the purchases and all the orders for the one company they've bought. They've got another one for the primary company. And so they have these distributed systems that all perform very specific functions. So it's not redundant. So every order doesn't go into every system. Each order goes into a specific targeted system in that scenario. So the problem in this scenario, as we outlined in the book, is that the process today is very manual. So you fax something in, someone is sitting at a console in a call center and alt-tabbing between multiple applications, very inefficient. So looking at how do you streamline the entry of this information, how do you make it easier to look it up later and after the fact. So some of the key requirements in this case were being able to accept data, being able to route it around to the right system, having a moderate amount of volume, not excessive, doing some form of reliable messaging, because we are doing orders. This isn't data that you can lose and wait for another one to come along. This would be pretty important information. So it's how do you do this sort of reliable messaging? How do you route it based on content? In the scenario we had here, the company does not have BizTalk in-house already. They're primarily a .NET Windows shop and SQL Server as well. So I don't know if any of you have read the Enterprise Integration Patterns by Hope and Wolf. Yeah. Yeah, I'll make the rare statement that if you have, let's say, $60 to spend, buy this before you buy our book, which is maybe faint praise. But nonetheless, this would be something that you should always have on your bookshelf, as this is really a foundational book around integration patterns. And so I have commandeered one of the diagrams I like most in this book, which is really this flowchart pointing out at which pattern do you end up with based on some of your criteria. So as we look at content-based routing, you know, you start off with a simple flow where you're processing a single message at a time. There's a single message going out, and it's going exactly once. And in this case, that points to their content-based routing scenario. So it's really about distributing data based on the properties of the data itself. Now, I don't know, probably most of us are still doing content-based routing in a publish-subscribe scenario, where you still have multiple targets, but you're filtering it based on the content. So I think our tech reviewer, Yossi Dahan, if you've read some of his stuff, he tech reviewed the book, and I mentioned in the book that this is typically when you have a single target for a piece of data. You're not sending it to multiple places. And he was coming from a BizTalk perspective, saying a lot of us have built publish-subscribe scenarios where we've also done subscriptions that route based on content. So they're not mutually exclusive. But I guess the core pattern is typically the fact that you have a message that needs to go to one place. So not saying you can't do it in publish, subscribe, but the pure pattern usually talks about a single target. So if you didn't do this with content-based routing, you know, you could also choose to have your upstream system know about all your downstream systems. That's one way you could solve this problem, so that the person submitting orders targets this system, they target this system, they target this system. That's fairly inefficient, and it doesn't help you if you end up swapping things out. So having a layer of abstraction that can then route this sort of information based on a product ID or based on a country, things like that, adds a lot of value. So most people here do content-based routing in their BizTalk solutions. You're doing some sort of promoted properties or context. Okay. I know typically when we look at content-based routing in the BizTalk world, you deal with context-based routing, whether it's a receive port. For me, the easiest example BizTalk-wise to build is a receive port send port that subscribes on the receive port name and sends it through. We all love that example, which has no real life usage, but it's a great example to build out real quick. So that's kind of your context-based routing. You've got your content itself-based routing. Do you find that you do more content itself versus context, like what address it came in on and things like that? More content? Yeah. Okay. Either one, doesn't really matter. Good stuff. All right. So we defined really three possible solution candidates for this. Something that was, of course, a BizTalk scenario. Something that relied on SQL and took a bit of a different approach. And then obviously using WCF and AppFabric technologies. So these are the three candidate architectures that we evaluated. Again, in each chapter, we evaluate each candidate architecture. We look at how we might address it from a design, development, operations, and organization perspective. And then we score it using a simple kind of thumbs up, thumbs down. Is this a good fit or not? So the first one in the BizTalk world was simply saying, looking at, you know, this is clearly a bread and butter BizTalk scenario. You've got little data chunks. You're sending it through. You do content-based routing fairly simply in BizTalk. The store and forward engine in the message box make sure you can do reliable delivery. So if one of those downstream order systems is offline, doesn't really matter. You can still queue it up and send it later. You also have all the different adapters. So it's pretty simple to connect to a database-based system, a web service, the file, the old host-based system. So again, that's a big value add there for this particular solution. And then you can also do the abstraction. So I can build an orchestration or a messaging solution that exposes one service endpoint that someone sends in, and they do all the content-based routing behind the scenes. So my caller still never has to know that there's one system or 13 systems behind the covers there. So one thing that we've at least looked at is this is not a BizTalk shop in this scenario, so there's clearly going to be a growth curve on development, bringing in contractors or bringing in one of our high-quality Swedish trainers and making sure that you ramp up the team effectively there. Obviously, the operational experience is one of those things that usually sells pretty well in terms of looking at this and saying, do I need this? Do I have an environment where I have the kind of complex configuration or I have a lot of different subscribers, so I need that strong operational experience where I can see things, I can manage it centrally. Or in our case, we've got two endpoints that I have to manage, so it's probably a little simpler for us. The second one was more in using SQL Server was about trying to establish that central repository. So anytime you look at integration solutions, there's a few similar patterns you're always looking at, whether it's real-time data sharing or batch sharing or going to a central repository in a shared database. So in this model, we were looking at having a master repository for all the orders so that these orders can come in from the outside, feed the master repository, and behind the scenes in that repository, using technologies like SSIS, SQL Server Integration Services, and the service broker to update the downstream systems. So you really have one, if you will, master list of orders, which then trickle down to all these subsystems. So that was a pretty good idea. You know, as we looked at that candidate architecture, the tricky thing there is you've got a latency problem because you're only going to update those downstream systems as fast as the master can update the others. So if you place an order and then you typically call back 2 minutes later and say, oh, I want to cancel it, that was spontaneous, I don't really need that whatever expensive thing I just purchased. If this is going through this sort of system, it's probably still in that master repository and it hasn't had that SSIS batch job run yet. Or if I'm lucky enough to use Service Broker, that might be real time. But I do have a latency problem in this solution. It also, while this is a good long-term solution, because most companies might want to centralize, as Ewan looked at some of the master data, you might want to centralize this information. At this point, if you're still growing, you're acquiring companies and this and that, that might make it more complicated for this particular scenario. So good long-term option, but a little less flexible when we add new systems quickly. It's kind of hard to ramp them up if you have this chaining together of repositories. So finally, looking at WCF 4.0 and Windows Server App Fabric, the content-based routing, and we'll talk about that a little more, has been added in .NET 4.0. So there's actually a built-in routing service in .NET 4.0 that does some fairly simple but robust routing within the solution. Workflow services in .NET 4.0, you saw a little bit of that from Steven yesterday, can provide you the durability. So the key in this scenario is that you're dealing with transactional records. You can't lose this data. So I have to make sure, unlike a simple web service call, if that downstream system is offline, I need a way to make sure I can queue things up and resume them later. I can't just have the web service call fail. and Workflow Services actually lets us do that. The routing rules themselves are fairly interesting in the routing services that you maintain them in an XML file. This also makes a fairly agile way to make updates to those routing rules and makes it pretty easy to maintain them. So we looked at all that, and in this particular case, because of the different criteria, we chose Windows Server App Fabric. But if we looked at the benefits, you know, the benefits of BizTalk in this case were clearly the adapters, the reliable messaging, the good operational experience, the routing built in. The risks in this case was the lack of in-house expertise, a little bit of a longer build time as there's a few more steps involved than simply taking existing out-of-the-box WCF services, throwing a real lightweight router in front of them, and being done. On the SQL side, again, on the plus side, it's a SQL shop. You're leveraging in-house skill sets. It's a good long-term plan, but in the short term, you have a little more complexity. You have this latency problem where, again, things might hit that master and not get synchronized downstream until later. So if we looked at what factors might change this decision, that's one thing we've talked about a lot even this week as we were preparing for this, is, you know, we look at all these, and each one of these things, and I think we say this about 1,000 times in the book, is your mileage may vary in this. You may look at that pattern and say, you guys are dead wrong, that's clearly something else. And that's fine, that's what architecture is all about, is there's not always the right choice, there's the best choice, there's just a good one for your fit. You know, I could say if we had a lot more endpoints, for example, I would probably go with BizTalk in this case, because to manage all of those subscriptions in a config file is messy and not particularly clean. I'd want SendPort configurations where I can see that, manage that, SendPort groups, something more robust. So that would be a case. If I were dealing with a lot of different formats, so if partners were sending me orders in a comma-separated file, I had other people coming in from a public website with XML, again, if I had these diverse sources, I might also use BizTalk there, since I can do this fan-in pattern where I take multiple sources in and fan them into one process. So we tried to think about in each case, and as you would read this, what things might shift your decision one way or the other, and that's where even the framework came in, is what might be a higher priority. Maybe exception management matters more, operational experience matters more, and BizTalk wins then. So to build this solution, which we'll go through now, and one benefit of having my internal clock completely screwed up from visiting here, since I was up since 4:30, I added some features that are no longer in the book chapter, so good stuff there. So what I ended up doing is I've got some downstream services which call into a database and insert a record. I threw a WCF workflow service in front of them so I could get durability. So if any of these services are down, I can actually suspend this in App Fabric and resume it later. These are all very familiar concepts since they were cannibalized from the BizTalk world. And then you put the router in front of it that, again, does some very simple routing rules to send it to one or the other. So this is what I built. This is the code sample you can download yourself. So the first step, we'll look at this in just a moment, is taking the web service, putting the workflow service in front of that line of business system, and then making all the appropriate registrations in App Fabric so that you could do this suspended behavior and actually see all that working. So let's take a look at that. All right. So I've got this order management service over here, which is simply the web service that talks to that downstream system. And since I want to completely fake it, because, you know, we get a lot of grief apparently on our internal author team for faking demos and things like that, I wanted to at least make sure that this demo actually updated the database. So when you do make the call, I do update a SQL database with this particular order. Just to prove at least the first thing of the day will succeed, I'm going to go into my environment here and actually call this web service. Who here uses the WCF test client? Yeah, that's the best thing Microsoft's produced in like 8 years. I think it's just... gosh, how much time this thing saves. Of course, I'll get the crazy error that kept popping up yesterday thanks to the service bus and the adapters. All right, so here's my little add order operation that was on that web service. And so I'm going to go ahead and make sure I'm not completely faking it over here. Here's my database. There's nothing up my sleeve. There's no rose on my table. I'm doing a Stephen Thomas style demo. Okay, so let's put some information in here. I'll invoke that, and okay, that happened really quickly. That actually worries me. So let's go back, and hopefully this is in my table. Hey, sure enough. So, hey, that's always a great sign. So the first service works. That's great. But as you'd expect, if I happen to go in and turn off this web server or turn off this downstream service, clearly my test client here would blow up, right? I mean, as you'd expect, the service is offline. The nice thing is if we do go back to AppFabric, though, just to take a quick look. As you see this interface that looks very familiar to us BizTalk people. And I can see the various service calls. Now you see there's multiple service calls, which might seem a little screwy. You notice that there's get operations over here. So this was me actually just hitting the metadata on the WSDL, also got registered as a call here. So it's actually an interesting data point as well, because you're seeing who's trying to access your service and who's accessing the metadata. So that's actually an interesting data point. You'll notice also up here in the query summary, once again, similar to us in BizTalk as we generously share this with other products now, is that I can change and tweak these filter criteria and end up doing my own query filters, and I can look at different parameters and find out maybe some different data points within my WCF service. So again, some interesting tracking that's turned on here. All right, so we got that. So let's go back to the solution. And so what I wanted to do is front this service. Now I've got a System B web service, which I don't think I have to demonstrate because it does the exact same thing at the moment. But it does the same, it updates the other database table. So I've got two services that do roughly the same thing. So then I built a workflow service project. And so what this does is it follows a pattern of, you know, I know we do this in the BizTalk world as well sometime with timeouts and things like scope, so that when I wake this call, the first thing I do is assign an order ID, but then I immediately return it, so then I can continue processing. So this is the great model that really the only thing that relies on here is that my workflow service has to be up. My downstream service could be down, but because I don't do that until later in my flow, the caller gets back their tracking ID or something like that. So I mean, I do this in BizTalk all the time as well. If you've got a send and receive web service call into BizTalk, typically you don't want to put too much in between that, because what if you're calling a database and it bombs out or things like that? If you can, try to just return a token back and give someone a means to query later, but do all of your complicated stuff after you've returned it back to the caller. So in this case, I return back an ID, and then I go ahead, assign all these input parameters, and call that add order service. As you see, that I get the little shape over there. And one thing Steven didn't show you yesterday is when you do install the BizTalk pieces, you do get the mapper now. So instead of having these 87 assigned shapes, which is ridiculously inefficient, I could choose to, which I'm scared to do this now because I haven't actually tried this morning, but I could actually put the mapper shape on here instead. And I don't think any of us are feeling that brave today. I'll at least look at it. Because now I've shown it to you. And so you can pick up what your input and your destination are. So I could pick specific contracts if this were data types, you know, .NET data types on both sides. I would pick both sides and it would go ahead and then build me a map, using the whole new fancy BizTalk 2010 mapper. Yeah, there's way too many things popping up now. I'm really worried I've just broken the whole thing, so we'll call that a day. Well, we can see that later if you're interested. Okay, so then I go ahead and call my order, add order service. And I very carefully do not save this. There we go. So if I go back to, well, actually, I'll also show one more thing in here, which I need to write something up on this to be 100% sure, but in my code, I also switch my workflow service. So the one thing that's interesting is, as Steven mentioned yesterday, they're trying to make Windows Workflow, WCF, a little easier to approach that first time. So instead of having to set up all these things in your config file just for a simple hello world, or even a real solution, there's the idea of default bindings. So if you don't put anything in your config file, it will use that basic HTTP binding and have an address and all that sort of thing. So same thing with workflow services, is that it just defaults to basic HTTP. I experienced some problems using that with the router service. So what I did is simply do a quick mapping, which is anytime you have HTTP binding, make it use the WS HTTP secure binding. So I need to test this some more, but this way it works. So sometimes you don't question things when they just work. All right, so let's go ahead and open the Windows Workflow Service. Bless you. Let's browse that. Our good friend, the test client. All right, and you'll also see I get the, Stephen mentioned yesterday, you've got this name pipes collection, which is used internally by some of the services, but we don't want that. We want to call the WSHTTP one. And this one takes in a particular object. Now, you'll notice also that one automatically created an order ID because I wouldn't expect my inbound person to actually provide that. That might be an internal generated ID. So in my case, I can just have this. I don't have to fill in the order ID field because the system will do that for me. Okay, so I get back an order ID, an acknowledgement, and then after the fact, after it went ahead and did that, then it should have come in here and inserted it into the database. Sure enough, it did. Good stuff. So, but again, if this thing was down, because now we have to simulate failure, of course, if I come into my AppFabric console, see, I've angered the BizTalk people. If I go back into the console here and I stop the actual downstream service, so I stop the application, more or less simulating that being offline. If I go ahead and call that service again, I get an answer back, I get an answer back, I get an answer back. I have no idea anything screwy is happening behind the scenes. If I come back to my console for AppFabric, we find out we have three suspended instances up there. And unless everything is going wrong, there should not be three records in here that are new. Good. So I do have three suspended instances here, and I can see some details about them. Because I'm getting the misleading statement that it's too busy. Well, it's not too busy. He's just not online. So that's really not true at all. So let's start this back up, though. I don't want to configure auto start. So let's start that back up. And either all together or one by one, I can go ahead and resume. Again, this obviously looks really familiar to people who do BizTalk stuff. If it doesn't, then you don't really do BizTalk stuff because you're always resuming suspended things. So we can go ahead and resume this. And they'll stay there for just a moment. I think you'll look at their pending activity as to resume. And I think this is where you mentioned that it plays in where there's a 5-second poll or something where it's looking for these changes. So this is not an instantaneous thing. But there they all came in. And if they're still suspended, then we would have problems. So let's take a look. Nope, and they're all gone. So the fact that my downstream service was offline really didn't matter because I was able to resume that with no problem from the AppFabric side. So some of the things that make that possible is if I configure these, and turning on things like persistence and tracking and things like that is what's really enabling me to do that sort of health monitoring and tracking and suspended behavior. So specifically what I was looking for was this. So even action on unhandled exceptions. So when things do bomb out, I want it to abandon and suspend it versus maybe a default behavior where it's just going to abandon it and not have anything happen, or worse, just terminate it or whatever. So I want to force AppFabric to suspend this so that I can resume and manage and maintain it. So the other thing I want to show here is when you do look at instances that have completed, this increasingly small window over here, we shrink this and we look at the ones that have run. I can see which workflows have run here. And I can see some details on them, but you might actually want to see more details about the workflow itself. So one thing you can do is add a custom tracking profile to this, which is just takes the form of just an XML document, where you could specify specifically which shapes you want to track, which variables you want to track. In this case, this is a catch-all. So I've built one that actually tracks all of them. So it looks for every activity, any executing process. It could also be closed. There's a number of states here. Any variable that's executing there, and so forth. So this is just catching everything. You could be very specific here and say, I'm only interested in these particular order amounts after the shape is executed or something like that. So the reason I do that is, so once I save this, when I go back into my actual workflow service, I'll make sure I do this right. If I look at my workflow service here and do configure, if I go to monitoring, I can actually pick that new profile instead of just the traditional health monitoring one. The fact that I picked this new one means when I call that workflow service, if I go ahead and look back on the console, I can actually see those variables as they're running, or when they completed. So if I look at that workflow, I can right-click any of these guys and view tracked events. And here's all the different events from the workflow, all the assigned shapes, all that sort of stuff. But I can click on these, and if they have any variables, they show up here tracked. The value is 4, value is 2003. Here's the value of the order ID. So I can actually see the values from the content itself, which is pretty interesting. You could choose to pull out some key attributes if you were doing debugging and things like that, because these do show up as part of the queries on the dashboard. So if I were looking at this, I think if I'm not mistaken, which is completely possible, is that sometimes you can pull in some values. In some cases, you can pull in some values from some of these queries based on the tracked values. All right, so that's that. So then the next key part, if you remember our solution, is the routing service. So how do I take all this stuff and then still choose A or B based on something coming in? So the routing service is new. Let's jump back to a quick description of it. Yes, yes, keep changes. A little mood lighting here. There we go. So the routing service. Yeah, I'm totally distracted right now. All right, so the routing service. Let's make sure I have it up on my screen as well there. So let's extend these. He's just testing me right now. I can tell. All right, there we go. So let's jump ahead. All right. So the routing service. The routing service is pretty much a simple service included within WCF 4.0 that then you can wrap up and use to do this content-based routing. So it does the protocol bridging. The idea is if you want to let people call in via TCP and then route it to HTTP endpoints or vice versa. So again, some of the great stuff BizTalk does, which is letting people come in one way, go out another, do the protocol security data format bridging. The router service does a lot of the protocol bridging if you'd like. Lets you do multiple endpoint contracts, so you could use the router service for request response. If, again, in this scenario, you were only sending it to one place, you can do a request response operation, or you can do a one-way sort of broadcast. You can do multicast, so you can do kind of a pub-sub model where I call the service and three different endpoints get invoked. You can pull that off. And then you have a number of ways you can do filters. So I can filter based on the endpoint address, an XPath statement against the XML going through, or I could write my own. So I do have a lot of options for how I actually write my subscriptions, if you will, in this. And I can prioritize things. So I could say, here's four things in my subscription table. If this one matches first, stop here and just use this one. I could do that. So let's just actually look at it then. So we look at the routing service. The nice thing is there's actually nothing to do with the routing service except create a project that can host it. But all you have to do is reference this particular assembly at the top, the system service model routing routing service. So there's no code in this. You don't actually implement any interfaces. You don't do anything like that. The only thing you do is simply host the service somewhere by referring to it here. And in my configuration file, I defined a WS HTTP endpoint for it. Now you see there's got a lot of configuration items for this. So I do define a namespace table so I can shorten namespaces. I define some filters. So I'm looking for a product ID. I'm saying if the product ID is less than 100, then that's the name of this filter. If the product ID is over 100, then that's the other filter. At this point, then I apply those filters to particular endpoints. So I say, if this filter is met, use this endpoint. If this filter is met, use this endpoint. And then here's the actual endpoints. So you can see you start to chain this stuff together. So you define your filter criteria, you define which endpoints they align with, and then you actually have your endpoint definition. You'll notice that in here, I'm using contract star. So nothing in this project, I have no references to my other projects. So there's no reference to those data contracts or anything like that. I'm just simply doing forward the whole thing to these other endpoints. So it's kind of nice that if I add a new order system right now, the only thing I really have to do is add one here, one filter, one that, and I'm completely done. So it's pretty loosely coupled there. So the other filter data, again, it's not super robust. I mean, I can do some things here. I can do aggregate filters. But it's not as necessarily full-featured as the BizTalk subscriptions I can define on a send port. So this is still a little more rudimentary. And again, I can't manage it as easily as I can on a send port. But for simple stuff, this seems to work pretty well. So the easiest way to test this thing is, let's find that endpoint again. So if I look at my routing service, what I can do is, the whole point is, it doesn't have a contract. So what would be tricky is, I can't add a service reference to this because I don't know what payload to send in the test client. So what I can do is take the workflow service I've already called, because that's the contract I'm interested in, and I can actually just swap the URL. So I can go in here and actually change the service configuration from this view, swap out my XAML reference, put in my router service, reload that. So I can still send the contract that the workflow service expects, because both workflow services implement the same data contract. The downstream systems are different, but my workflow service looks identical to both of these. So all I'm doing is still filling in all of this information. I've got a product ID of 3003, so I would expect this to go into table B. Once again, let's make sure table B is empty. I get back an order ID. There he is. Let me switch this to just 3. Invoke that. And it should show up over here. There we go. So, I mean, the router service, again, from a testing perspective, is pretty nice. I can just change that endpoint URL. It'll jump to both spots. Otherwise, you'd have to write some custom code to still implement the right data contracts and send the right data over to the service. So that is pretty much the overview of that. I don't want to belabor that too much more. So I want to, you know, see if there's questions on that. Yeah. What? With the value of 100, my data flaws and logic flaws will be exposed by not including a greater than or equal to. So that's exactly what will happen. You know, actually, so it's a good point. I guess I should slip you some money since that talks about a feature I didn't mention. So you can do backup endpoints. So that's one of the nice things. If none of the filters are met, you can actually define a catch-all endpoint that would get invoked as well. That's kind of a nice feature that, you know, in BizTalk, we always get the subscription not found, which we always shake our fist at because we just screwed up something. But in this case, you could get, there is no subscription not found. You could actually just route it to a catch-all endpoint, which is actually a pretty nice feature. In my case, I did not define a catch-all endpoint, so I would probably explode in a fiery thing on my laptop, and that's not interesting to me right now. Other questions on this? I mean, at the point, you know, we walked through this pattern, and really a lot of the key of the pattern was it was a fairly simple workflow scenario. We had two endpoints. If this had scaled up to 30, that configuration file would be unmanageable. I wouldn't want that to be my source of all my routing rules. That would be a mess. If I were doing a lot of very complicated source and endpoints, if I were doing a lot of security things, significant data transformation, you know, all the good stuff that BizTalk adds in there, the BAM stuff, in my case, I'm not interested in that because this is just, in this company's scenario, almost an intermediary solution. It's going to solve a problem until they standardize on the order platform. For now, this is good enough for them to stick with, and it solves the problem. Who's built anything with the routing service? Negative three hands? One? All right, there we go. That was pretty simple, though. Pretty familiar, obviously, from the BizTalk perspective, that most of the concepts are fairly similar, but you're seeing like a prehistoric BizTalk right now in all of this. I mean, it's familiar, but you can see even the console for App Fabric is still pretty, you know, it's not as full-featured. All right, any other questions on what you saw? Good. Oh, yeah, in the back. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the question is about migrating this, and you know, especially as you migrate up or down, I guess, because in reality, you might start this as a BizTalk solution and say this doesn't fit the need there, maybe it's just too much. I just want to keep my existing WCF services and throw a router in front. I mean, what I did with the workflow service was technically unnecessary. I mean, I could have just put the router service calling the WCF endpoints, much like BizTalk would today. If my solution was I have two endpoints and I can either call them with the router service or BizTalk, I can do the router service in 10 minutes and maybe 15 minutes do BizTalk. So depends on that. The workflow service adds a little complexity, and that doesn't port directly to an orchestration today. So I'd have to do a kind of a complete rewrite there. But actually, I mean, you introduce a good scenario in general is that this might be your first step, and then as you see the problem kind of expand and get more complicated, that becomes something you do migrate to your actual enterprise service bus. That this is, might be the departmental solution, and then finally you come in and say, you know, for an enterprise scale, let's actually upgrade this, take the same principles, because the patterns I did there, you know, that workflow service, we do the same thing in orchestration. So conceptually, it's the exact same solution in a BizTalk world. But you do have to do some reuse. There's not any magic wizards that update it. Other questions? Good. Okay. So we'll move up next to Stephen and the amazing world of human workflow.